Hello, hello, coming at you from wherever you are listening to the Peaceful Body Podcast today. I am your host, Inez Bai, and you all know that I love to do a little bit of meditation. It was actually suggested to me by my parents when I was about 22, early 20s, and I was going through a very stressful period in my life, which I have spoken about a lot on this podcast. So go and check out some previous episodes about stress or about self-care or something like that. And I actually developed insomnia and I wasn't able to sleep. And my parents, who are not at all into personal development really, or being self-aware or consciousness in that kind of realm, recommended to me that I start meditating. And it had such an effect on me, but in a way that it wasn't like I meditated once and then my life was fully changed. But I've really noticed now, after doing it consistently for, you know, a good couple of years, 4 or 5 years, that it really has had a big effect on all areas of my life, like the way that I show up in relationships, the way that I manage stress now, and the way that I can be creative and just like access other, you know, parts of my brain, which is obviously really, really important, especially when we're thinking about healing our relationship with food and finding more love and compassion for ourselves as well. So in the light of that, I have actually brought on a meditation expert, Genoa Van Keekham, who is going to be talking about what meditation actually is, who it's good for, how we can use it to our benefit. And I'm just going to read his bio off his website, because I think it gives a really good image of who is going to be on joining us for the Peaceful Body Podcast today. So it starts with, "One thing I'm not is a spiritual guru levitating around in a robe, although I do have the legs for it. I'm a skeptic. I had always associated meditation with religion or having to join a cult. I was also under the illusion that meditation and mindset practices were about clearing your thoughts, which is basically impossible. And it's not about this at all. Throughout my life, both at work and socially, I had never felt like I was operating at my fullest potential. I always felt I could be more productive, happier, and more intelligent." So that just kind of gives you an idea of how this conversation is going to go. I love Genoa's take on meditation and the way that he teaches it. He's really, really passionate, a wealth of knowledge, and I'm just really keen to be bringing you this interview so that you can start to realize how not only important meditation is for you, but actually really critical as a functioning human being, and that there actually are no, you know, we don't have to follow the stereotypes of meditation. Just like Genoa said, we don't have to be levitating or be meditating for 4 hours on a mountainside in robes. So I really, really, like I said before, love that Genoa just breaks it down and makes it really accessible. Something that he's also really passionate about that we talk about a lot is supporting the everyday man in becoming more self-aware. And I think that's a really important conversation to be having too. Aside from that, I am super, super, super excited to announce that I am in hyper early bird launch stages of Hungry for Life, which is my 4-week course where I have hand selected all of the best tools, all of the best practices, the best mindset rituals into one beautiful, succinct course for you that's going to help you to heal your relationship with food, find more balance in your life, learn about what your values are so that you can let go of any negative self-deprecating habits, so that you can feel more like just like the best version of yourself, basically. So we'll be starting that in 2020. But for those of you that are action takers, I'm going to reward you by giving you a 40% off code that is valid until next Friday, the 20th of December at midnight 2019. When you sign up, all you need to do is make sure you put the coupon in at checkout, earlybird, all one word. And when you also sign up, for only the first 5 women that do so before the 20th of December, I'm giving you a bonus one-on-one mentoring session with me where we can get really deep into what exactly is holding you back and give you some strategies to implement, you know, before the Hungry for Life course actually starts, which we will be starting together as a group on the 20th of January. But as soon as you save your spot and purchase the course, you will get access to the one-on-one mentoring session with me so you can start making progress straight away. So if that sounds like something you're interested in, you can go and check out more of the details in, I will leave the link in the show notes below, or you can just go to Inez by Fitness, INEZBYE fitness.com/hungry for life, and you can find out all of the details there. Like I said, the 40% off is only available till next Friday. So if it's something you've been thinking about, about for a while. You visited the sales page a few times before because this is the second time that I've run this course. Now is really the best time to get it and to soak up all of the juicy vibes. All right, let's get started with today's podcast with Genoa, all about meditation and its great, amazing benefits. Hello, I am here with Genoa. And actually, on that topic, this happens to me all the time when I'm like introducing myself to new people. And they ask me if my name is real. And I'm like, yes, of course it's real. Like, because my name's Inez Bai, right? So I've got that extra like Bai. People are always like, oh, did you make that up?
Or, oh, you're like an Inez Sia. Yeah.
Yeah. And if I was going to choose a name, would I really choose Bai as my last name? Anyway, does that ever happen to you?
Oh, dude, my name always gets screwed up. I mean, it's what I've been dealt with all my life. It was quite funny. Sort of, yeah, it's like, oh. And then some people when I was younger used to know to make a bit of fun of it and muck it up on purpose. And but now it's quite funny because I'm really bad at names anyway. And now on top of it, I spend most of my time trying to explain my name to someone. So I've already forgotten what their name is because I'm like, it's said this way. And it's, is that Italian? What is that named after? Where are you from? I'm like,
it feels so real. Literally every single time. I used to work in this clinic when I was an exercise physiologist, and you know, old people like love getting to the origin of things. Yes. So they'd be like, oh, Inez, where's that from? Like, are you Spanish or like, where were you born? And then it would be this whole big thing and just like, yeah, I know what you mean. And you're like, what am I even talking to you about? This has like literally nothing to do with who I am. Yeah. Anyway, here we are.
Hello, Inez.
Hello. Hello, Genoa. How's it going? How are you?
I'm really good.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm really good. I'm really keen to have you on the podcast. You know, you're a meditation teacher, which I guess we'll dive deep into. And meditation has been something that has been really foundational to my own personal development, but I guess also just in my life as well. And so that's why I'm really keen to bring your expertise on to the podcast. So I guess what is the main thing? Like, let's start with the big questions. What is the main thing, like the main myth that you try to like get people to overcome in order to initiate a meditation practice, if that makes sense?
The biggest standout by far, which everyone still thinks meditation is about controlling your mind or clearing your thoughts. So I have that many people that say, yeah, I'm just not very good at it. I struggle to clear my mind and I'm like, or control my thoughts. And I don't know, somehow there is this, people have this idea that that's what it is purely about, which to be honest, so did I before I knew anything really about it. So my first point is to say there are some techniques that, you know, you'll hear the teacher, particularly some of the guided ones, you'll hear them. And I found this often at the end of some yoga classes. You'd have a teacher go, okay, now, and clear your thoughts of the day. And I would, that'd make me angry. I'd be like, I almost swore.
Go for it.
Yeah. I wasn't sure. I was like, I tend to get like verbal and
around. No, just know, the, go the with etiquette, the flow. Yeah, etiquette. Yeah, no, that's fine.
It'll be half a podcast of beeps. I'll be like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, it'd get me so frustrated because I was like, how is anyone here clearing their thoughts of the day? And then that was my initial introduction to what I thought meditation was as well. So that is one of the biggest myths that I come up against and try to explain that, you know, trying to control your thoughts or clear your mind is like trying to get your heart stop beating. It's the nature of how we operate as human beings, right? Thoughts are going to come and go, but what some practices do is help you to become less at the mercy of those thoughts and less involved in them and allow them sort of to pass through and have, and also then over time, you know, after practicing meditation for a long period of time, then naturally your mind will calm down a little bit. And, you know, I've been meditating now for like 6 or 7 years and I now, there wasn't any, to be honest, I never had this intention by meditating, but now I can have some impact on calming my mind when I feel it sort of start to go. So, but that is sort of a byproduct after time as opposed to it being part of the actual practice and control piece of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I very often will,
actually, I always recommend to my clients to start meditating. And one of the biggest pieces of feedback that I always get is, oh, I can't clear my mind. Meditation is just not for me. And so this is really helpful to know, because it's actually not about clearing your mind. Like you said, it's actually, and as far as I'm aware, in the way that I've been doing my own practice, it's just kind of having that space to, I guess, observe your thoughts and not necessarily have to like stop thinking about that and think more about this and be clear and calm and all of that. It's awesome how you've said, like, after 6 or 7 years, now you're getting to that place where it's like, oh, I might be able to have some sort of control of some of my thoughts. And it's really about that ongoing practice, as opposed to sitting down, doing it once, and then being like, nope, couldn't clear my mind, and I'm never going to do it again. So what would your advice be then to someone who is saying that?
Well, the first thing is that meditation, I liken it to the term exercise, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, I want to exercise. Okay, what kind of exercise do you want to do? What do you enjoy doing? What do you want to get out of it? Mm-hmm. Because that's the same with meditation. People might have tried one app or been to a guided class and of yoga, and they think that's what meditation is, and they're done with it. So the first thing is to actually have a bit of an idea of what you're actually looking to work with. Like, do you want to increase your ability to maybe shift where your, you know, a lot of your attention is placed in terms of your daily thought process, and increase your awareness of how you operate? Is it that you want to really work on maybe sort of anxiety, or do you want to work off the buildup of stress and fatigue that you put in your body for the last, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years? There's lots of different techniques that do different things, and teachers that teach in different ways as well. Just like you don't want to like every personal trainer. And it's quite important, because I see meditation as, if not more so important than doing just purely physical exercise, but yet people still haven't. It's just a lack of education, understanding. So educate yourself. You really got to get an understanding of, okay, what is it that you want to work on? And most teachers should offer free info talks or chats and information to help you get a better understanding of what it is they do and how they do it. And also, everyone learns slightly differently. Some people prefer a more structured soul meditation where they get told what to do and have to focus on something, and that's fine. But some people prefer a bit more of a self-sufficient practice. They can do it whenever they like and fit it in here or there. So I think that's the main part of it, is to sort of have an understanding of maybe some of the different types that are out there, which is what a lot of what I talk about, and educate yourself a little bit.
Okay, fascinating. So on that note, I might get you to explain the different types of meditation, but before you go into that, what was the thing that triggered you to get into meditation, and what was your reason for starting to meditate?
I kind of fell into it in a way. So up until, I learned when I was about 28, mm-hmm. 27, 28. And up until that point, I'm naturally skeptical, and I naturally was not attracted to anything that I saw that potentially looked like joining a cult or becoming a woo-woo and airy-fairy and trusting in some guru or whatever it was. And that was what I thought it was all about. And I was like, well, fuck that. And so I was pretty, you know, anti. And my background had always been in, you know, when I grew up, the first 20 years of my life, I was all about sport, you know, and so it was very, you know, country sport driven. And then, you know, did commerce, and I was in corporate for a bit and worked for an alcohol company. So a lot of the industries I was in weren't really things that led to me to be exposed to any of this kind of stuff. And my natural groups wasn't something that was necessarily, I wouldn't say acceptable, but it was sort of seen as a bit weird. And so that was it for me. But at the same time, I was going through life thinking that there were certain experiences I was having were just part of what you had to deal with to be a human being, right? So, I didn't realize I had anxiety. I thought it was normal that before, you know, a date, or before, you know, began a sport, or before certain things, to feel physically ill. That was just what you push through, right? And you push through the nerves, then you get there and you get it done. And so there was also some things that I didn't even realize weren't normal. To be, all they have become normal, unfortunately, but they shouldn't necessarily be accepted. And so, you know, there was also, when I was really quite stressed through periods of work, you know, I couldn't go to sleep without, I had to have put my laptop on and put earphones in and put some music or a movie on. Mm. And that's how I'd go to sleep. I wouldn't watch the movie. I just have that there to cancel out the noise and so-called help me go to sleep. You know, and that was just what I thought was normal. And then it was literally, it was quite funny. I feel the universe has its ways of throwing things at you. And so it was funny enough. A client of mine, when I was working for the alcohol company, they were meditators, but they were what I deemed as normal, right? Mm. They ate meat and drank wine and had a good time. And the guy was a surfer. But I was like, oh, okay. But I really respected them also. And when they sort of mentioned that they meditate, and the guy who was a chef and a really well-respected chef, he just said to me, man, I just wish I'd learned this when I was younger. And that for me, I was like, right. And then I was researching performance, high performance. And there's a pretty common thread between anyone who's performing at the top of their game, whether they're a big wave surfer, entrepreneur, politician, you know, even there tends to be, maybe politicians less so, I'd say probably, funny enough. Yeah. But businessmen, that sort of thing, most of them have some kind of meditation or routine. In the open-minded ones. So, and that was for me also a big kicker in seeing there was real credibility behind people that were doing it. And so that was what, you know, I just went, something in my guts was like, I think you should do this. So I still didn't quite get it. And I dabbled with in a minute we'll go into the technique that I specialize in, I'm sure. I dabbled with a few other bits and pieces, but nothing with that involved. And the technique that I learned, just based on Vedic, which is a mantra based technique, just it worked for me. And then I just to stick with it, and I literally did.
And here you are.
Yeah.
It's your whole life now.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy how that sort of plays out. Huh?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and I can really relate to what you said before about not really realizing that you were dealing with anxiety, because I remember quite recently, only in the last 6 months did I have my first psychology appointment, which was amazing. Cause you know, it's so good to have someone to go and talk to. And she kind of, we were talking about, you know, as you do, like your childhood and high school and all of the things. And I didn't realize how anxious I had been my entire life. Like, I didn't realize that, like, you know, you didn't have to freak out over all these little things, or that there were other ways of dealing with what was going on, or you didn't have to kind of, like, for me, like, a big thing, and I think a lot of people can resonate with this, is like putting everything in its neat little box and making sure I know where everything is and kind of like ticking things off. And I didn't realize that there was like another way to live, right? And since being able to let go of that, I haven't actually felt so anxious, and I was almost getting stuck in this like anxiety like compound thing. And so it hasn't been until I've been really able to like observe my thoughts, and meditation has definitely been really helpful in that as well, but also just exposing myself to other people that have other ways of living, I suppose, which sounds like what had happened when you were able to actually relate to someone. It meant that meditation became a little bit more accessible to you. And I think that's like a key part of the way that you approach your work as well. So can you explain to us the different types of meditation and what you specialize in?
So there's a whole... there's a range of different types. Okay. So you've got, this is where it gets all messy and clouded. So there are meditations which are like, there's guided meditation, right? So most of the apps are this. You can go to classes at the end of, at the end of yoga classes, and they often involve visualization. So where you try and picture something or an idea in your mind or a scenario that can help your body experience something aligned to whatever it is you're envisioning or seeing or manifesting, or some of these visualizations can be used to sort of help calm you down. Now there's also the mindfulness styles of meditation. So mindfulness itself is, it's a state of present moment awareness. So it's a lot of people use that as like a synonym for meditation. So mindfulness is just, it's sort of the practices that align with being mindful. you're right.
Sorry.
Get it out.
Just choking over here.
Yeah, go for it.
I'm fine.
Based around a lot of the Buddhist philosophy, right? And a lot of this philosophy is discusses the ideas that a lot of our suffering as human beings comes from the wandering mind and from speculation, right? Now, that speculation looks like the future, always worrying about, this is the anxiety piece, I hope this goes away, this goes a certain way, what if it doesn't, what if it does, blah, 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 or speculation of the past. You know, if only this happened, why did this happen, blah, blah, blah. And we spend most of our time in those spaces. And this leads to a lot of our pain and suffering, which is just all up here. And we create these stories for ourselves. And so all of the ideas around mindfulness is that if you can use a technique, whether it's a visualization or often they use like focusing on, you know, a breath or a part of the body or something in particular, and the idea is that you can even do it while you're like having a cup of coffee. You can be mindful and just, you know, have a cup of coffee and like smell it. What do you see? What do you, you know, what do you taste? And you can be present and mindful over around drinking your cup of coffee. And this, then if you're in the present moment, there is no suffering, right? Majority of the time. And so that's where a lot of these mindfulness techniques come from. They're around bringing you back into the present moment. And you can use them as tools anytime, anywhere. And you could, I would say, be mindful of something you just want to incorporate into how you operate as much as you can while you're walking down the street. You know, a lot of us are doing, you know, having breakfast, eating breakfast, looking at your phone while reading the newspaper. You know, that is the opposite. You know, you're teaching yourself to be scattered and everywhere and all over the shop. While if you just were to practice the morning, just having breakfast and looking at your food and even maybe thinking about how the oats were, how they got to your bowl. That is really just being in the here and in the now, which is an antidote to that suffering. So that's why mindfulness has become such a big thing, because it's a great practice to incorporate into your life. And so these sort of techniques are great as like tools to help you at a moment in time, right? To help you if you're feeling a bit overwhelmed or stressed or, you know, anxious or whatever it is, these practices are great just to use. Now, and then we also have techniques that are, there's one called like a metta meditation or loving kindness, which are designed to increase feelings of like love and happiness. And you can, and in some ways gratitude as well. And so by, you know, placing your awareness on those kind of feelings, you can strengthen your familiarity with those feelings, if that makes sense. And then the other sort of the main bracket of meditation that's out there, which is what I specialize in, is using mantras, specific mantras, but in a, I would classify these as a non-directive, effortless style of practice. So, you know, the visualizations and the mindfulness and the loving kindness, they are using effort. So you are trying to focus on something, an idea, a thing, a breath, whatever it is, a part of the body. And these non-directive techniques are designed to de-excite the nervous system and stimulate the brain in a certain way. So the way it works is the mantras aren't like, they're not affirmations. They're literally like a sound vibration. So, you know, if you're, you know, everything at a deeper level, you know, works off vibration and energy. And so these sounds are designed to be, you just say them in your mind quietly. And the idea is that you just sort of say it just lightly. You're not like chanting it really strong and powerful and clearing the thoughts. And it's more like you sort of move between thoughts and the mantra and thoughts and the mantra. And the mantras will engage the mind in a way to allow your mind to sort of settle and go beyond the relative thinking, the speculation of thought and then the ego. And when this happens, due to the symbiotic relationship between the mind and the body, your body, nervous system de-excites. Now, the research into these practices suggests that when you are in this state, your nervous system gets to states of rest, you know, up to 3 to 5 times deeper than sleep, right? Which is profound. And so what this is designed to do is to help body build up the old stress and fatigue that we've accumulated into our system. So think of a lot of the other techniques and the mindfulness is like a tool to calm you at a moment in time, while these techniques are designed to work off the old build up stress and fatigue that we accumulate in our bodies. Because every single thing we do as a human being, we accumulates in our bodies. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so what's also happening here is your nervous system is de-exciting. Your body's gets thrown in that sort of rest and repair state, sort of not too dissimilar of what happens when you go to sleep. Because when you go to sleep at night, your body just automatically does this amazing sort of healing thing, right? You close your eyes, and if you are sleeping well, that is.
Yes.
Your body, you know.
I hope so.
Yeah, that's another piece of it. Your body works off what it's accumulated during the day. But unfortunately, where we are today, we experience more in a day that our bodies are able to process at night. So we wake up the next morning, we've already got debt, right? And so that's what this technique is designed to do, is to help work off that debt. And that debt is the barrier between you operating at your full ability, or that is your barrier to you operating at your full potential. And so what we're doing here is we're allowing the nervous system to get in a state where it can do that extra work for you and stimulate the brain in a way that cultivates a state of total brain coherence. So the whole brain actually lights up in balance, which is what you want to, what you want. You know, you want your whole body to be operating in balance, right? And it sort of also literally is like rewiring your brain every time you do it and strengthening the brain's neuroplasticity, which is its ability to create new habits and ways of doing things, which we all want to grow, evolve, be better. This technique really, really helps aid that that expansion by removing the barriers to it.
Okay, and this is called Vedic meditation, and that's what you teach, is that right?
Yeah. So I studied Vedic and teach Vedic. I do some of the other stuff as well, because sometimes in, you know, certain environments, like in corporate bits and pieces, it's easier to do a little mini guided meditation that people can just take away and use as a tool. And some people like prefer a bit more structure. But Vedic is the technique that I specialize in, yes, which is, you could call it like a transcendent technique. So you are transcending the relative thinking.
Okay. And yeah, okay, really interesting, because I think I hear a lot as well this idea of like, oh, surfing is my meditation, or like walking is my meditation, but that's different. That's like the mindfulness that you were talking about before, which can still like help you to, I guess, feel more in the moment, which helps you feel maybe less anxious or whatever it is, but it's different because you're not actually working off that debt, right? That you were saying?
Yeah. So yeah. Those activities are great, and that's what a lot of people, they'll say. I hear that all the time as well, surfing or rest meditation. And they're doing two things. They're because they probably think that that's what meditation can be, which in some of the cloudy definitions of meditation, I can see why that crossover is there. But you're going for a run, you're not meditating. You're going for a surf, you're not meditating. You're doing a great activity which can have great benefits for your body and for your mind. I also see there's an excuse a lot of people say, They don't want to meditate. So this is their excuse to say they are meditating, which is also
makes them feel better.
Another whole conversation to have. So, you know, do those exercises, but I would be hesitant to say they are your form of meditation. Their exercise.
Yeah, definitely. So, what are your tips then for initiating a meditation routine? Would you call it a routine?
Well, yeah, I call it a practice. So, first, be aware with what you want, what you're able to commit to, and what time you're willing to give it. So, you know, if you're like, because the technique that I teach is designed to be done as a practice, so meaning daily, right? Yeah. So I meditate twice a day, every day for half an hour each sitting. You can do it as you, if you learn, if I don't have half an hour, I do it for 20 minutes. If I don't have 20, I do it for 10 minutes. So there's a bit of flexibility there, but it is designed to give you the most benefit from doing it regularly as a practice. So firstly, I would say get clear on what you're willing to, the time you're willing to invest. A lot of people, the biggest barrier is time, and everyone thinks they're the busiest person alive. You know, I don't have time for this, or I'm like, okay. Imagine if you were more productive. Imagine if you're able to manage your time better, which is a byproduct. It's just a funny, you know, it's always a bit of a funny conversation. Yeah. So, but also, let's be honest, like, you know, it's something new and different. And if you're only willing to commit 5 minutes a day at the beginning, maybe just try a simple little app, which is really cheap and accessible, and dip your toe in the water. If you really are interested in seeing a real shift, and look at doing something a bit more involved from an actual teacher, like what I do. And the initiation for all these is is quite different. Mm. So in terms of tips for initiating, I think you need to get a bit clear on, you know, what you're sort of looking to achieve and what sort of time you're willing to give it, and then move into a practice. Cause you know, the way that I teach my technique is, I teach it over 3 days. So part of the initiation process is you come on the first day and I give you your mantra and take you through some certain steps and sequences. But that can only be done if you commit to the whole course, which is 2 hours a day for 3 days. And then, you know, it's not no good if you decide to commit to that course and spend the money on it and invest in me and yourself, but then only meditate once every 3 days for 10 minutes. It's not really worth it as such. So you're probably better off just dabbling until you're ready to give it the full time.
Interesting. Yeah, because we spoke about this when I met you in Byron. I'm someone that's definitely been like doing the guided meditations for, you know, quite a long period of time now. And I do it normally like maybe 10 minutes a day. Sometimes I'll do it twice. And I found for me, and something that I'll say to my clients a lot, is that like it's never like I do the meditation and instantly afterwards I like come out of it and I'm like, whoa, everything's different. But it's been more of like an accumulation thing. Whereas now I notice that I'm like a little bit more calmer in like different situations, and you know, maybe like in the way that I have interactions, or I'm not kind of like throwing the bird up at anyone that like cuts in front of me in traffic or whatever. And I actually was recommended, I went and did like a palm reading ages ago, and they actually said to me that I should do mantra meditation. It would be like way more effective for me. Mm. And I'm someone that's quite self-aware, right? But I've had this like weird resistance to doing it because I'm like, oh, I'll just keep doing the guided meditation or whatever. So it's really helpful to hear from you. Like you can start with 5 minutes and you can build it up, and like it doesn't have to be like a, I don't know. I think when we don't voice it out and we don't ask questions and we don't think about why we want to do it, it feels really overwhelming to start it because it is a new habit, right? And we don't know that much about it already. So and obviously that's why it's so helpful to have you to come on here and, you know, talk about it. So you meditate twice a day for half an hour.
Yep.
Wow. Kudos.
Yeah. But the thing is, I've made it a non-negotiable.
Yeah.
Literally, amazing. It's just like gym hygiene for your brain.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't leave the house without brushing my teeth or having a shower if I'm going out to work. I don't leave the house without meditating. You know what I mean? If I don't exercise for a few weeks, I feel a bit sluggish and not quite on and off. And even my decision making on foods changes. I notice that. I'm only having one life in this incarnation or whatever you want to think. I want to be the best I can bloody be and invest 3% of my day to make 97% of it better. I spend way more time than 2 to 3%. You know, it could be as little as 20 to 40 minutes a day. I spend way more time doing mindless bloody Instagram shit or the rest. Like it's worth it. You know, it's 100% worth it. But yeah, I mean, I would say if you really want to up level your practice, like anything, you come and see a teacher.
Definitely. Okay. And so then you do is it like a weekend thing that you do for like 3 days?
I tend to do it on the weekends. I can do it I do private courses, which are like time and location of choice. This particular technique I do in person, and it should be done in person because that whole giving of the mantra needs to be done in person. But there are sort of level down options for online, but it's normally done around 2 hours one day, 2 hours the next day, and then 2 hours the following day. And the idea is that you walk away being self-sufficient. You don't have to plug into a phone. You don't have to be guided. You know, you can literally do it in the bus quickly on the way to work or at a park bench. You've got 10 minutes, sit down and close your eyes. It's designed to be as easy and accessible and as integratable as possible. And that's what this technique was designed for, the householder, which is us, living busy, crazy lives who want to perform a little bit better.
Love it. Who doesn't want that? So I'm under the impression that the mantras are quite like sacred in a way. Is that right? You're not meant to like share them with anyone or?
Yeah. Well, they are meant to be kept private because there's a few reasons to that. One is that there are different mantras. So people get different mantras.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were to share your mantra with someone else and theirs is slightly different, you might go, oh, maybe mine's not as powerful or wrong. Mm-hmm. Or you say your mantra to someone else and suddenly theirs and they're like, oh, that sounds stupid. And next minute you're meditating, you're thinking about your partner who said your mantra was stupid. And you start losing, you know what I mean, the impact of the mantra. This is the one of the few things we have just for ourselves. And the power of the mantra comes from when it's only used in meditation, not when it's just for an hour and used it again in the world like every other word. It's different to a word, and it's a lot more powerful in terms of its vibration of when you're saying it, you know. And that's what it's designed to do. So yeah, you do keep it private.
Very it's cool. Funny.
People that don't get it or are confronted by it, they're the ones who are like prodding, be like, what's your mantra? Oh, it's a bit weird. Keep it. It's like, oh, that's your problem.
Yeah. And how do you go about like choosing a mantra for someone? Because so, the teacher chooses it for you and allocates it to you or whatever.
Yeah. So you have to study, like I've studied Vedic philosophy. So to be a teacher in this technique, you have to have studied. You can't just, you know, be a health coach and be like, oh, I'm going to teach meditation now. And that's where mindfulness can be done. Like mindfulness is quite easy. Mindfulness can be taught by a lot of people. Like it's reasonably simple. And so people can just be like, all right, now close your eyes. And I do that sometimes. I teach people for a body scan, you know, or talk them through something. And so that's quite easy. But the mantras and the philosophy that go into this technique are a lot more involved. I mean, you know, and it's using knowledge that's over 5,000 years old and trying to integrate it into how we operate. And so you have to have studied it and you get taught the different mantras. There's different sets of mantras and different brackets of mantras designed to align with people of different age brackets and different stages of life. And so we are taught them. And then when we initiate or teach you, then we give you a specific mantra. And even to the extent where there's seven sets of mantras or something like that, I've only learned 2 to 3. There's even levels of like, you have to have taught a certain amount of people before you can get the next set of mantras for the advanced practices. Because, you know, if you're working with people's brains and nervous systems here and there's some stress release going on. And if you're just like throwing out mantras, it actually can have some, like I always warn people when you learn to meditate for the first time, make sure you've got a quiet weekend because it can have some stress release or stuff going on because it's shaking up your body. It's a deeper than cognitive level. It's a cellular level, right? Which is quite powerful. And so people can have some interesting experiences. And so the teacher needs to know how to deal with that, how to talk people through it if there's stuff going on. And so it's why it's quite important that they've done the work themselves. They've meditated for a while themselves, not meditated for 6 months, but like, I'm become a teacher. They've been through it themselves. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, they've been through it themselves. They've studied it and they know the right mantras to give and then know how to work with people who are experiencing certain things. And then you can study again if you want to learn the next sort of sets of mantras. So there is a bit of method and structure to how they're taught as well.
Cool. Feels special. Yeah, definitely. And in terms of like, so, and then when you finish the course, you like tell them, us, whoever does it, like, okay, you need to meditate for this amount of time, like ideally. And so you walk away being like, okay, this is when I need to do it.
Well, I give you best practices. We'll sit there and we'll like workshop how you meditate. We'll meditate together. And then I'll ask you questions. How'd you go? What are you battling with? People are always going to struggle. Oh, I'm doing this. And I'll check in to make sure you're doing it to get the most out of it and doing it the best way possible. And then, you know, I'll give you recommendations and bits and pieces, but part of it's also just to choose your own adventure. It's not the way I teach. I'm probably a little bit of a rogue in how I teach, which I'm aware of. So I'm a bit more like, okay, you know, like I'm probably one of the few meditation teachers who sits there and swears and then goes out for a beer afterwards, you know, which is fine. and so I'll give best practices and ideal ways of doing things in my bit more rough and hopefully relatable way. But then you go away and you try to make it fit in with your, you know, your life. I'm not going to sit here and go, you now cannot, you know, drink wine more, you know, you can't have meat anymore because that affects your expansion of consciousness or whatever, the, you know. Well, like, this is the ideal scenario here. And you just work back from there and do the best you can and weave it in. But then also once you've learned from me, I also do like monthly group catch-ups where I'll host a workshop where if you've learned from me, you can come along, do a group meditation, ask questions and have a check-in. And that's all part of it as well. And sort of it's designed that, you know, once you've learned from a teacher, you invest in them, you can go back and ask them things without being charged an hourly rate or whatever it is. That's kind of how it's designed as well. So there is, because people fall off the wagon. It's called life. You know what I mean? You don't want to be like, oh, I'm going to get judged or I'm going to pay another however much to ask them a question. So it's also designed that to encourage people to not feel too shy about like, oh, you know, I learned, meditated for 2 weeks and then dropped off the wagon for a month. You know, it's like, all right, cool. How do we get back on? It's designed to be, yes, it's a 3-day course, you're self-sufficient, but if needed, there should be a little bit of follow-up. And there are other teachers who teach, you know, often, particularly in the Vedic, you know, if you've learnt Vedic from one teacher, not all, but some teachers also allow you to, I know there's plenty of teachers around here that, you know, I learnt from my teacher, but they were quite happy for me to come to their group meditation, which is also quite nice as well. And I'm pretty relaxed on that. Like, as long as you've invested in the technique, you might have learnt from someone else and they've moved away or that you don't resonate with them anymore. And there is in some, with some teachers, there's that around as well, which is good.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. And did you like, did you imagine when you were thinking about like becoming a meditation teacher, did you feel like you would need to change more aspects of your life? But now you've obviously made it into your own kind of vibe, I guess.
No, the reason, partly the reason why I became a teacher was I was like, I'm just going to be unapologetically and authentically me, which means I'm rough around the edges and you'll still see me out at the bar on a Sunday night drinking and doing a tequila and that's okay. You know, I'm not suddenly this purist who's found myself and is now all above everyone. And hopefully if I teach you, you can come and join me. Like, I think that's, I don't like that approach at all. I'm like, here, here's a great technique. It can help you have a better experience of life. Let's do it and fit it in and still have a bit of fun while we're doing it. And so half the reason why I became a teacher was because I didn't think there were enough teachers that were relatable. Like my mates, I was like, are there any teachers around that I know that my mates would learn from? And I was like, probably not. So that's, that was a big driver in me becoming a teacher, was to, you know, push the envelope a little bit and
break the mold.
Yeah, yeah, because I think it's such a important technique that everyone should be doing. I have no doubt on that, full stop, right? But how do we get more people doing it? We make it more relatable, make it easier, break the stigma. So that's what I was interested in doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, even just from following you on Instagram, I always had this idea that you had to be like sitting up really straight and like, you know, whatever, but you're just like so chill about it. And that just makes it feel so much more like accessible, like you said, which is, yeah, awesome. And on that note, let's switch gears a little bit. We were chatting about this before we came on and started recording. You're currently in the launch, or like have already launched a new event called Momentum, which I'm really interested in hearing about, because I think there has been like obviously a huge rise in like women's circles and like women coming together, which is awesome, and like totally support that. And I go to them and I've really found a lot of value from that as well. Like feeling really connected, I think, is really, really important. But at the same, you know, on the same side of that, I feel like a lot of the men that I hang out with don't have an outlet or don't know how to manage their emotions or feel, or even there's like a really big thing with men never ever asking for help, or even as something as simple as going to the doctors is like this really like emasculating thing that like they can't go unless they're like literally on their deathbed. So I would love to know more about this event and I guess how it was born and what the aim is of it.
So this, it literally came, you've sort of touched on a lot of the points there, is that currently there's a bit of an epidemic in the, well, with everyone, but particularly within males around mental health and our understanding of what it even means to be a man, right? And let's be honest, we've got no idea. We're just we're fumbling our way through this world, doing the best we can with what we're taught and known and, you know, our conditioning to try and, you know, bring our best selves forward. And it's come to a point where a lot of us are struggling and a lot of us are not bringing a very constructive or expansive or positive, you know, self forward. And so women tend to be a little bit more intuitive in terms of their own bodies and tend to be better at sharing feelings and emotion and being open to ask for help. And this is part of, you know, the discussion we have with, so it's Blake and Dylan, two mates who we've gone into business together to drive this momentum program, is around, well, you know, we were lucky enough, us, to have mates that we could talk to properly. And I was lucky enough to learn meditation, which was like the gateway for me into being okay with not having my shit together. Like, I used to be pretty bloody arrogant and, you know, very strong-willed and controlling and, you know, this is, you know, and pride myself on, you know, drinking a whole lot and picking up chicks and all the rest. And, but then I was, whether it's luck or not, was started cultivating a network of friends, both girls and guys, that I could talk to and that I was able to talk to. And then meditation started opening up my awareness of like, oh, wow, you know, it's okay not to have my shit sorted. And there are techniques that I can use to help me perform better and, you know, being, you know, vulnerable or whatever it might be isn't being weak. It's actually a strength, you know. And so I was like, okay, so there's, you know, me and, you know, as Blake and Dills were like, we were lucky enough to have this kind of stuff around us. Like, what about for all the other guys who don't have any idea and don't know? You only know what you know, you know, and if you, a lot of us have this sort of wall up. And so we're like, well, you know, and even the real hard hitting thing is, which for me was never really, I never really acknowledged, was that, you know, the statistics show that as a male, between the age of like 18 to 40 odd, you're more likely to kill yourself than die from cancer. You know, it's like, well, fuck, how's that? And that's not okay, really. And so I was like, all right, well, what are we, and a lot of guys are suffering in silence that way. And so our whole idea was like, well, how do we create, and there are still, there are some great platforms out there, and there's Are You Okay Day, which isn't necessarily men's focused, but it's mental health focused. But there's still some stigma around, you know, asking for help and mental health. Still 100% there is. I know there is. And so we're like, well, how do we create a program that's relatable and maybe even like attractive to men, that's more about performance and growth as opposed to being a support group? That's not what we're interested in necessarily. So we've launched a program that's designed to be like a tool, knowledge, skill sharing program, which will be a membership. So literally be, there'll be an online model and an in-person model. So if you're regional, you can't make it in person, you can, there's be an online membership. And there's also gonna be an in-person membership where you actually can come to fortnightly. We have like a dinner and we'll talk about a topic and workshop it. And we'll maybe do a little meditation and then we'll have a beer and some dinner. And but we'll talk about some serious stuff and we'll get some, we'll share some good knowledge that can hopefully help guys be like, oh, wow, like, I can try this and, oh, this is maybe why I act in this certain way. And maybe I don't have to be the guy that feels like he has it together and put that, you know, front on. And oh, I just realized that I'm putting on this mask all the time, which isn't my true nature. And just because I like classical music and want to wear a dress sometimes, doesn't make me any less of a man than a guy who plays football and drinks beers. You know what I mean? And that's what we're trying to navigate. So it's not like we're sitting here as experts going, this is what it is to be a man. It's more like, well, let's try and tease out and work away some of these barriers to allow us to better understand what our own true version of man is and be okay with that and not be crippled by the anxiety of, or social anxiety or the negative thoughts or whatever that may be. And so this is what we're trying to get our heads around now, is how that exact model is going to look. But it's going to be both in line, because that connection piece is so powerful. They're saying the new epidemic is, you know, not depression but loneliness. Yeah, it's there's that piece of it as well. So it's really around us teaching skills and knowledge and tools and creating community for men who want to up-level how they perform.
Yeah, I love that. And I always think, like, whenever, like, you know, because of the line of work that I'm in, and I'm quite an open and vulnerable person, always like sharing my shit, I have like a lot of guys come to me all the time with like whatever issue they're going through. And I feel like there's only so much that I can help with because I don't relate so to that level, I guess. Mm. And I always think that, like, when a couple, like a man and woman couple, what's it called? What am I trying to look for?
Relationship.
Split, whatever. Like, yeah. Anyway, whatever. When a man and a woman split in a, from a relationship, I always think, like, it must be so much harder for the man or the male to deal with it, because I feel like women at least are able to, you know, talk to their friends and cry on their shoulder, and that's all, like, so acceptable. Whereas most men that I know will, like, break up with their partners and just, like, hold on to that and not have, like, a way of moving through it, or they just, like, suppress it and they try and, like, forget about it. But then that's why, I guess, they keep having these, like, patterns appear in relationships, and they, like, self-sabotage, or they appear in other relationships. And so I think it's really beautiful that you're creating this space where it's, like, still chill and cool, and, like, you're having a beer with the boys and, like, you actually want to go. But it's also about, okay, well, how can we, and not just necessarily if you're breaking up with someone, but if you're, like, you know, wanting, struggling at work, or just feeling really stressed or overwhelmed, and you feel like you don't have anyone else to talk to, then that's, like, a really open, but also, yeah, I could just keep coming back to that word of, like, a chill way of, like, having someone else to talk to. Because that connection piece, so important, and something that I'm really realizing that, like, it doesn't even necessarily mean that you need to go to that group and, like, you have all the answers. Like you said, it's just really about being open and feeling connected and not feeling like you're the only one that's maybe not coping 100%, which is freaking awesome. I'm super excited about that. And it's open, like, women can obviously come to the events, but not the...
We have some workshops which we invite men and women to, because, you know, a big part of it is women supporting men in this, right? You know, if women want to be treated better by the men and have, you know, happier husbands and partners and sisters and the rest, they need to support them in their growth, because they don't know. Like, they're just, we're learning from, you know, a mixture of conditioning from our schoolyard mates and porn and movies and all this kind of stuff, and some real savvy marketing. And we don't know. We think we know. We tell ourselves we know. So we need support from the women as well. So there's one aspect of it that will encourage women to come along as well. But then the main crux of it will be focused. It'll be men only, to create that space where we can feel comfortable and talk about whatever the hell it is, whether it's, you know, how to be better in bed versus what, you know, what relationship with money is, or how you want to, you know, lift more weights. We don't care. That they're all pieces of being a man. That we're going to incorporate into what we talk about and teach and facilitate those workshops around. There'll be also some in-depth, like, workshops around certain things and retreats. We can go out and chase crocodiles and, you know, hunt the Northern Territory. Maybe not chase crocodiles.
Definitely,
but, you know,
leave that to the men.
So yeah, there's going to be different pieces to it as well. So
that is epic. Wow. That's really good and great to know. Cause like I said before, I do have, men who approach me as well. So definitely something that I can refer them on to. Okay, awesome. Well, I'm feeling really, really inspired from this chat. Was there anything that you kind of wanted to, I'm going to ask you a couple of little rapid fire questions to finish up, but was there anything that you kind of wanted to leave us with?
I would say, just if you've tried meditation and you think it doesn't work for you, have a bit of a further look. There are techniques that will work for you, and it is by far the best investment you'll make in your time. It's transformed the way I operate and look at life in terms of performance, creative intelligence, physical. My metabolism is sped up. Like, it's worth looking into, and not letting yourself or the little ego conversation or the weird stigma or tell yourself you're too busy to sort of push away from it. And yeah, I'd really recommend doing a bit of looking into it, because it's, it's powerful.
And you can still do tequila shots. It's okay.
100%. And it can help you recover the next day from those tequila shots.
Epic. Love it. Okay. First question is, what is your favorite food?
I love Japanese. I love, like, sushi. I could eat that breakfast, lunch, dinner. Like, it just feels clean and healthy. And I also love sake. So that kind of brings into that together. But that's my go-to.
Have you been to Japan?
No.
Oh,
to be honest, something about their culture just really intrigues me. They do everything so meticulously and beautifully. And, you know, I've heard they mimic, you know, a mate of mine said he went to Japan and had one of the best pizzas he's ever had in his life. And he's been to Italy as well. And he's like, they get things and they're just perfectionists. And there's something about their culture that really excites me. So it's on my long list of places to go.
Tell me about it. Yep. Yeah, and they're incredibly polite, apparently.
Yeah, I hear that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, which is really interesting. Unlike, I don't know, unlike Australians, I feel like, always have their bit to say.
Yeah.
Okay, next question is, what is something that you're improving on within yourself at the moment?
So currently, we actually, funny enough, with the boys, with Blake and Dylan, the momentum, we've made it clear on, like, if we're going to be pushing this stuff, we need to be constantly working on our own stuff as well and making each other accountable. So we've all called out things that we want to work on and be called out for. And one of the things for me is a level of humility, so being more humble, which is an interesting one in terms of, you know, sometimes you share something and you might tell yourself that you're sharing it for a certain reason when really it's just like a little subtle brag or trying to validate yourself that doesn't need to be done. It's an interesting one. And so I sort of, that's something I want to, you know, those people that just speak when they need to, or some people that just like, you feel they're just telling their story and rah, rah, and just constantly, you know, putting out their bits, and it's like, it gets boring and tiring. And so that's something that I don't think I'm necessarily horrendous at it, but something I just want to really, I really, when I see other people that carry themselves in that way, I really thoroughly respect them. And so that's something I want to really embody and continue to work on.
Yeah, I guess it's like that, like knowing within yourself that like you don't have anything to prove almost.
Yeah.
You don't need that validation.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a bit of that self-worth piece. If you're confident, happy in this, you don't need to be sharing things you don't have to necessarily share to gain that external validation from other people.
Big piece to work on.
Yeah.
Love it. Love it. And then the last question, as this is the Peaceful Body Podcast, what does that mean to you? What's the first thing that comes to mind when you think of a peaceful body?
Balance in all your bodies, you know, the spiritual, the energetic, the physical, you know, I sort of, to simplify that, you know, I look at the mind, the body and the soul is like, well, I have this thing, I've got triangles, right? And a peaceful body is a body that's aligned in those three spaces in terms of like, you know, what your true nature and way of being is, also how you actually carry yourself, as well as the environments that you're putting yourself in, as well as the activities that you're doing. Does that make sense? And so a peaceful body is a body that's operating in alignment with all those areas, which can be difficult. But finding, and that comes to a bit of self-exploration of like, okay, you know, these environments are old ways of doing things that aren't conducive to the best version of me and my expansion. And often we find when we're in those situations, we operate in that sort of sympathetic nervous system and the fight or flight, where it's that level of, we're not comfortable there. And so, and that impacts the body as well. So if we're in flow and in alignment, you also notice that things come a lot more effortlessly. Like naturally the universe just goes here, here, here. And so for me, when you can start lining those pieces up, I have little moments of every now and then where I'm just like,
yeah.
And then I get caught up in the old, you know, old story, old habit again. And so that for me is the constant process of evolution into that alignment and its full body.
Yeah, I feel that. I feel that. Yeah, that's awesome. And where can everyone find you?
Well, obviously on the social medias.
Yeah, the old social medias.
Yeah, it's all the social medias or website, I suppose. So,
all right.
I mean, you can want to spell my name.
Yeah, I'll just link it in the show notes. How about that? You can provide me with all your dates and we'll put in the show notes so that everyone can find you, maybe ask you a question or, you know, talk about doing some meditation practice.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much, Genoa. This was freaking awesome. I feel really inspired. I'm really like excited to explore more. So yeah, thank you. Really appreciative.
No worries. It was fun chatting.